So in order to understand this, we need to sort of back up to chapter 16. In chapter 16, we saw the outpouring of the vials, the judgment of God, the final judgments of God right there back up to the seventh vial. And that occurred just right at the end of the tribulation, so just before the second coming of Christ. And as I've said to you many times in these studies, this book is not chronological. If you try to read it chronological, you're going to get so twisted up, you'll end up like a packet of crunchies. So what we need to do is look and say, where does this chapter 17 and 18, where does it actually fit? And I want to tell you that it's theologically difficult material, so I'm not making any pretensions, but there are some who believe that the beginnings of this will be seen prior to the rapture. But that having said that, I'm not one of them. I think that this occurs at the middle point of the rapture, and there's a good reason for saying that, and I'll tell you what it is. It's not unrealistic to believe that the groundwork, if you like, or the fundamentals of the Antichrist kingdom may begin to take some kind of preliminary form before the rapture, and I think that's what blokes are talking about, and I don't think that's unreasonable. But once the rapture occurs and the pesky Christians have been taken out and the Holy Spirit is no longer active in the world, then what will happen is a period, you know, whenever you mention to untaught Christians, you mention the tribulation period, they immediately think of all sorts of cataclysmic things happening. But in point of fact, the first 3.5 years are not like that at all. First 3.5 years are quite sublime in terms of there not being any war, because war won't be tolerated. In terms of supply and religious freedom, you'll have this one world church to which everybody will belong and they'll all be happy campers. And a covenant will be struck between Israel and the Antichrist. And in that covenant, he will allow Israel to rebuild the temple. Rebuild the temple. Always that's on the Jewish mind. Rebuild the temple. And, you know, as we've said before, the marble and the granites and everything else is that's all ready to go. So it's not like they've got to go out into the quarries and start digging up rock. It's ready to go. It's stored. They've got a model of it there. Everybody can go for 10 shekels. You can go and look at it. And everything's looking rosy until we get to the middle of the tribulation period. The temple is completed at the end of 3.5 years, and blood sacrifices will be reinstituted. So it'll be all ready to roll. And at that point, the Antichrist will enter the temple and will demand to be worshipped as God. That's what's going to happen. And that's called the abomination of desolation. Daniel prophesied it. Christ reinforced it. That's going to happen at the middle point of the tribulation. It's now at this point that this whole structure, and remember when we talk about the city, it's a city that sits on seven hills. This is Rome we're talking about here now. It has a parallel in the Old Testament Babylon, And it's referred to here as Babylon, but the actual city is the physical city of Rome, and that become and that during that first 3.5 years, that becomes the absolute epicenter of satanic control and satanic operation will be in Rome. And it's not a great shock. You've only got to go to Rome to realize, you know, how grandiose and all the rest the whole Catholic system thing is. But what we saw in chapter 17 now is we've reached the midpoint of the tribulation. This thing's reached this one world church has reached the zenith of its power, and Satan enters into the temple in the form of the Antichrist and says, "I want to be worshipped as God." He's wanted that since time immemorial, and now he comes in and he says, "I demand to be worshipped as God." The Jews, of course, will realize at this point that they've been duped. And then the two witnesses arrive. And literally, all hell will break loose at that point in time. And God will literally smash to smithereens the one world religious system. At the same point in time, he will smash the actual city of Rome. And the reason that the city of Rome, remember, is now going to be the absolute epicenter of satanic power, and he will smash that. And what we see in chapter 18, what we saw in chapter 17, was the annihilation of the one world church, and now in chapter 18 the annihilation of the city referred to as the Great Harlot, and we're now sort of ready to enter into the actual study. Now we're sort of positioned. Is everybody okay with that positioning? You're all good. All right. So verse chapter 18 says, and after these things, after what things? After John says, after I saw the one world church smashed, he says, after these things, I saw another angel. So a different angel to what we saw in 17 and verse 1. He sees another angel come down from heaven. This angel has great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. This is an angel shedding abroad the Shekinah glory of God, and lighting the earth with it. And this angel cries mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen. Interesting. Does he stutter? No, I don't think so. Babylon the Great is fallen. And is become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. We'll get to that last bit in a minute, but I want to go back to is fallen, very significant statement, very significant phraseology. And in the Greek, this is an aorist verb. Is fallen is in the aorist verb and the aorist tense, and it's in the middle voice. So it's what that means is this is something that has happened. An external force has done this at a specific point in time, which is not. Actually, they don't tell you what time it is. An aorist doesn't specify when, just that it did happen. and so that makes this a very complicated thing in the Greek here. But this is what it means. The first is fallen is spiritual Babylon. You see? Babylon the Great is fallen. Aorist, middle voice. It's done. And it's done from outside of the one world church. And then we see in chapter 18 is fallen there as a second time, and this is now the political or physical city of Rome, or as it says, Babylon. and so we see is fallen spiritually, is fallen physically. It's smashed. It is absolutely decimated. And it's really important that you understand the decimation that has occurred here, because it'll become clear why that's important as we move through the passage. So look with me at Isaiah 34. And here is the prophecy of the great prophet Isaiah in relation to this fall, chapter 34, or verse 11. And it says, but the cormorant and the bittern shall possess it, the owl also and the raven shall dwell in it, and he shall stretch upon it the line of confusion and the stones of emptiness. Now go back to look at the verse. It says, it becomes the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. And here it is in Isaiah, and he says it's a cormorant, the bittern, the owl, the raven. These are all unclean birds, and they shall stretch out upon it a line of confusion. They shall call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there, and all her princes shall be nothing. And thorns shall come up in her palaces, nettles and brambles in the fortresses thereof, and it shall be a habitation of dragons or demons, and a court for owls. The wild beasts of the desert shall also meet with the wild beasts of the island, and the satyr shall cry to his fellow. The screech owl also shall rest there and find for herself a place of rest. There shall the great owl make her nest and lay and hatch and gather under her shadow. There shall the vultures also be gathered, everyone with her mate. It's savage language, is it not? But this is the prophet Isaiah, and he's being shown hundreds and hundreds of years before John on the Isle of Patmos, he's being shown the same event. And how he expresses that revelation, and how John expresses that revelation overlays just perfectly. So you get the impression here, you get the understanding here. There's nothing left of this city. It's just ruins. And for all nations, now to verse 3, for all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. The word fornication here doesn't have a sexual connotation like it normally does. It is a picture of evil for the sake of economic gain. That's what that word means in the original. It's a picture of evil for the sake of economic gain. And so it is, so in that first half of the tribulation, at 3.5 years, there's so much commerce going on, because that commerce is what's paying for the Antichrist kingdom. Kingdoms have to need money. And this becomes a fabulously wealthy situation where all of the world focuses in on this one place. Verse 4 says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Now, just go to Jeremiah 51. If you could go back there for me. Jeremiah chapter 51. And this takes a little bit of getting your head around. And I think this verse hopefully will help you. Jeremiah 50 is a long chapter, isn't it? Jeremiah 51, verse 45. And it says, my people, capital M, meaning God's people, my people, go ye out of the midst of her and deliver ye every man his soul from the fierce anger of the Lord. Now, in this, we have to identify who these people are. I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. Who are they? Well, they're the Jews. And they've been deceived. They've been in covenant relationship with Satan. And he's deceived them, and he's backtracked on his promise, and he's demanded to be made God. And God speaks to his people and he says, come out of that, my people. Because you know, some of these Jews, at the end of in 3.5 years, some of these Jews are going to be saved. They're going to be the ones who look upon him whom they have pierced, and they are going to be saved, and they are going to be the ones who go through into the millennial kingdom. These are God's people, and God is calling to them to come out from this thing, because I'm destroying it. And then in verse 5 we see, for her sins. Why is God calling his people to come out from her? It says, for her sins have reached under heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her according to her works, in the cup which she has filled, double. Fill to her double. This is a call out to God to reward Babylon as she rewarded God's people. And how did she reward God's people? By deception, by persecution, by violence, by death, and by massacre. It's always been that way. And verse 7 says, how much she has glorified herself and lived deliciously, it says in the King James Bible here. And that deliciously there is not talking about cheesecake. Deliciously here is talking about self-glorification. So pumping themselves up and glorifying themselves. So she's glorified herself and she's lived with self-glorification. So much torment and sorrow give her. The call out to God is to punish severely and then double what she deserves. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. You feel this arrogance of self-obsession and self-glorification just oozing out of this city because of the fabulous wealth that's there. And then in verse 8 we see, therefore shall her plagues come in one day. Now, don't read over that. It's very important you don't just read over that phrase. In one day isn't referring to a 24-hour period. It's referring to the suddenness of God's judgment. Boom! And there it is. It says, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, and mourning and famine, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges. Now, I want to just give you a little Greek lesson here. In one day, if you look at your Greek New Testament, that's actually placed first in the Greek sentence. And by placing it first, it's emphasizing the suddenness. Now, I want to take you back to an Old Testament example of exactly this. Here is Babylon, and Belshazzar is having a big party. They were big on parties, these guys. And they're all as drunk as monkeys. And a hand appears in the banquet hall, and it writes on the wall, many, many tickle you fasten. Many, many tickle you fasten. It means you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Nobody could understand what it meant, so they called for Daniel, who wasn't at the party. And Daniel came in and said to Belshazzar, that says you've been weighed in the balance and found wanting, and you're as good as dead. As Daniel was actually interpreting that message, the Medes were actually making their way into the palace via the aqueduct, and they were making their way in, and he was overthrown basically within the hour. It was sudden, boom, just like that, it was done. And the Medes took over Babylon. And that's actually how it happened. And this is the same concept, here. In one day, all of this will come upon as a very sudden thing. And now we're going to see this evolve as we work our way through this passage. Verse 9 says, and the kings of the earth who have committed fornication, so by committing fornication, remember what that was, that it's pure evil for the sake of economic gain. So the kings of the earth who have sought by all sorts of evil ways to create massive wealth for themselves and live deliciously. Remember what deliciously was. Once again, live deliciously means that they've glorified themselves. They've held themselves up to be some great thing, to the complete exclusion of God, of course. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication, verse 9, and have lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. Why? Because of the economic loss that they're going to incur, their means of all this wealth and self-glorification has just been smashed and broken right before their eyes, and there's nothing left. There's no point bringing your organic coffee beans into the market because there is no market. There's no city anymore. Okay. Are we doing all right? Okay. Good. I don't want to go racing ahead and have you feel like you've been left behind. Now we see something for the first time that we're going to see again and again here. He says, verse 10, standing afar off. Standing afar off. Standing way off in the distance. Why were they standing off in the distance? Because of her torment. And they're lamenting her. Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. There it is again. For with absolute, with unpredictable suddenness, your judgment has come. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys her merchandise anymore. Now, we're going to now enter, that's the end of the first section. So we're going to pick it up at verse 11. I want you to make a note to yourself that chapter 18, verses 11 to 19, the entire thing is a lament of the merchants. That entire section. So we're just going to read through it, and you'll see why they're lamenting. So verse 11. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. The merchandise of what? Of gold and silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, that's purple cloth, and silk, and scarlet, and all fine wood, and all manner of vessels of ivory, and all manner of vessels of the most precious wood, and of brass, and of iron, and of marble. It's quite a list, isn't it? We're not finished. And cinnamon, the spices now, and cinnamon, and odors, and ointments, and frankincense, and wine, and oil, and fine flour, and wheat, and beasts, and sheep, and horses, and chariots, and slaves, and souls of men, and the fruits. So far there's been a whole string of ends, and the fruits that thy soul lusted after. And then he says, they are departed from you, and all things which were dainty and goodly are departed from you, and thou shalt find them no more at all. It's an exhaustive statement all the way through to 14. This list should scream at you and say that these people had a complete abandonment to the wealth of this world and a total disregard for God. And you know how we come to that conclusion is very, very obvious. Look at the lamenting. Look at the bewailing that's going on over all of these items which we just read out. Did you see any bewailing over the destruction of the One World Church? Not one. The spiritual thing meant nothing to them. It was all about commerce and trade and making obscene amounts of money. And notice that they were trading in slaves and the souls of men. So this is pretty evil. And now you see it says at the end of verse 14, and you shall find them no more at all. It's a sweeping removal of every possession that they valued. Every possession they considered precious has been swept away in the rubble of this city. And then we get to verse 15. It says, the merchants of these things, the things we've just spoken about, all that dirty big list, the merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, shall stand afar off. There they are again, see? Standing afar off, shall stand afar off. Why? For fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. And saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour, and there it is again, the same reference, in 1 hour, it says with absolute suddenness, so great riches has come to naught. God destroys it, bang, completely without any notice. It doesn't just sort of wind down; it just gets smashed really suddenly. For in 1 hour, so great riches has come to naught. And every shipmaster and all the company of ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off. Nobody wants to go anywhere near this place. And they cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? What city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads, and they cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, and for in, guess what, 1 hour. For in 1 hour is she made desolate. Over and over again is the term 1 hour, meaning you know, unpredictable, unannounced suddenness, and it's done, and they're finished. But that's the end of that second section of chapter 18. Then there's a little short section here. and it says, "Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her." So now we need to have a little bit of a look here. If you go over to chapter 19 and verse 1, and after these things, after what things? After chapter 17 and 18, "After these things I heard a great voice of much people in heaven saying, Hallelujah." Where were they? In heaven. So when you see here in verse 20, "Rejoice over her, thou heaven," it's referring to the saints in heaven, not heaven itself. Okay, so that connection is very clear because of the "and" that begins chapter 19. So "rejoice over her, thou heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her." Let's go to Isaiah 44. Back to Isaiah chapter 44. And verse 23. And it says, "Sing, O ye heavens, for the Lord has done it. Shout, ye lower parts of the earth. Break forth into singing, you mountains, O forest and every tree therein, for the Lord has redeemed Jacob and glorified himself in Israel." That's talking about the millennium. That's talking about that moment in time when God will redeem Jacob. Jacob, of course, being a picture in the prophecy, Jacob being a picture of the of Israel in totality. And here we find in verse 20, "Rejoice," he says, same thing. "Rejoice over her, thou heaven and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you of her." He has redeemed Jacob. That's where the prophecy comes from that fits here in this cry from the angel. And then verse 21, "And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, Thus with violence shall the great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found again no more at all." Same as he says in verse 14. You see that connection right there. No more at all. Let's go to Jeremiah 51. Jeremiah chapter 51. The long hook, Jeremiah. I'm nearly there. Jeremiah chapter 51 and verses 61 to 64 says this. "And Jeremiah said to Sariah, When you come to Babylon and shall see and shall read all these words, then you shall say, O Lord, you have spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever." And there is the prophecy from Jeremiah in relation to the smashing of Rome here in Revelation 18. And the millstone, of course, is a picture of God's judgment. "And the voice of harpers and musicians and pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee." The very silence of the city, the very lack of music and sound in the city, is testimony to the devastation of God's judgment. There's nothing left. "And no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee, and the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee." Now, in chapter 18, verses 21 to 23, there are seven no mores. Seven times John records the words no more. Let's see if we can find them. And the light, the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth. For by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. Let's look at Jeremiah 51:49. 51:49, and it says, as Babylon has caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. And here is the prophecy, and here in Revelation, John says, and in her, in Babylon, was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. That's how the world treats God's people. Make no bones about it. And it's no different today. The world's crowd hate us just as much today as they did back in the times of Babylon, and certainly in these times here. So seven times there's going to be no more, no more, no more. It's all over. So when you look at the chapter as a whole, what you see is the complete annihilation of the city and the destruction of the ability of that city to function in an economic sense in order to produce the income flow for the kingdom of the Antichrist. And now, and then from that point, it moves further into the second half of the tribulation period. Well, made it with 5 minutes to spare. Wasn't such a long chapter after all, was it?